Welcome to the Summer of Peace, a free global online event featuring leading peace builders sharing effective methods for taking inspired action and co-creating a new peace narrative. 11 Days of Global Unity is produced by the Shift Network in partnership with We the World. This event brings together brilliant changemakers making meaningful progress on critical issues, including interdependence, economic justice, human rights, and peace. We're grateful you're here. Please share this event with your friends and family. Plus, join us on Facebook at the Shift Network. And now your host, Rick Olfick, founder of We the World and the We Campaign.
Welcome, everyone. We're so glad that you're joining us today. To reach me, Rick Olfick, and find out more about 11 Days of Global Unity, We the World, and the We Campaign, you can go to we.net. Today, for the culmination of 11 Days of Global Unity on the UN International Day of Peace, September 21st, we have a very special dialogue. And I want to thank Kurt Johnson and his Unity.Earth Convergence team for helping to organize this. We will be discussing the 11 Days of Global Unity theme, Peace, with three extraordinary people: Deepak Chopra, Karenna Gore, and Kabir Sehgal. Deepak Chopra, MD, and fellow of the American College of Physicians, is founder of the Chopra Foundation and co-founder of the Chopra Center for Well-Being. The author of more than 85 books, including numerous New York Times bestsellers, he is a world-renowned pioneer in integrative medicine and personal transformation. And I'm happy to say that Deepak Chopra is also an advisory board member of We the World. Welcome to the 11 Days of Global Unity Summit, Deepak Chopra.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rick.
You're very welcome.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Kabir Sehgal is an American author, composer, producer, Navy officer, military veteran, investment banker, and financial executive who is the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of five books. He has also won two Grammy Awards and a Latin Grammy Award as a record producer, and is the co-author with Deepak Chopra and Paul Avgarinos of Home, Where Everyone is Welcome, Poems and Songs Inspired by American Immigrants. Welcome to the 11 Days of Global Unity Summit, Kabir Sehgal.
Thank you, Rick. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's fabulous to have you all. Okay, let's jump right in. On September 21st, as we celebrate the International Day of Peace and the culmination of 11 Days of Global Unity, the question is promoting unity important now in order for America and the world to have peace? Is it possible to have unity without having an external crisis or threat that brings people together? And given the social and political tensions we've seen in America and elsewhere, how can we move towards creating a culture of peace and nonviolence? Let's start with Karenna Gore. Karenna, you and your organization, the Center for Earth Ethics, have been involved with protecting people and the planet regarding environmental issues such as climate disruption, oil and gas extraction, fossil fuel pipeline construction and that kind of thing, with huge budget cuts to the EPA and the US pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, the environment has become yet another flashpoint issue in our society, like immigration, healthcare, and white nationalism. Do you think our society can move towards unity, at least regarding the environment? And please tell us about your work and the organization, the Center for Earth Ethics.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. And I want to say first what an honor and pleasure it is to share this conversation with Kabir and Deepak and yourself. I think that absolutely on all the issues that you named, it is possible and essential that we move towards unity. I think as far as environment and ecology are concerned, we need look no further than the things that do unite all of us as human beings. That is, we all breathe air, we all drink water, and we all share and get our life from the life-giving force that is this planet that we share as home. So I think that in terms of looking for an external adversary in order to find unity, we have one in our own mistaken assumptions. Any assumption that human beings are completely separate and disconnected from the natural world, it's actually quite a deep assumption, and many of us hold it even when we're in this work and need to always be reminded. So I think we can look at those deep assumptions, question them. We can also work towards unmasking the violence that is done that we take for granted as part of our way of life. The extraction and burning of fossil fuels still does provide 80% of the world's energy. And yet we know that it is disrupting our weather system, and this planet has a very thin shell of atmosphere that we need to take care of. So we need to start to see the violence that we're doing by digging and burning these fossil fuels. Of course, there are other planetary boundaries that are being crossed with the production and consumption cycles that create so much waste. This happens in terms of industrial runoff into fresh waters, streams, rivers, lakes, oceans. And we need to start to really see that for what it is and work hard in civic engagement to make sure that we are making ourselves, through our elected representatives, accountable to that. I work at the Center for Earth Ethics at Union Theological Seminary, and we are working together to do that. We have three ways that we work. We work in education, in public discourse, and in movement building. And it's really essential that we work also to see the intersectionality with all of these other issues, that when we are viewing the earth, all these other living beings, and the air and water that we depend on as objects that can be exploited and destroyed at our own will, we will no longer belong together on this earth. When we treat other people that way, when we see them that way, no matter what perspective we're coming from, we're also losing ourselves. So I'm very happy to be part of this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it's fabulous that you said that the common threat that we all face is our assumption of separation. So let's go to Deepak and talk about this as well. Deepak, given the social and political polarization we have recently, do you think we can create unity in society? And given what Karenna just said, do you agree with her that is the common threat that we all face, our separation and a separation from ourselves and from nature in general? The question I have also is, if we can't bring people together, how can people really have inner peace without having a peaceful society? Maybe you can talk a bit about that. And also, what can we each do emotionally and spiritually to deal with the divisiveness and disunity that we see currently around us?
So first of all, I want to say that it's great to be back here reconnecting with Karenna after all these years. have been a big fan of the family of Al Gore, going back a long time, and his very strong fact-finding mission for all these decades now about climate change. And I also want to say that Karuna has been a great champion of this and bringing a new generation to this conversation. I think what has happened is that because of the political polarization, there's an emotional disconnect on even the facts, and the facts don't convince people. And one of the problems is that science has not addressed a deeper spiritual issue that Karuna brought up. You know, we all breathe the same air. The air is literally our breath. The trees are our lungs. The rivers and waters are our circulation. And the earth recycles as our flesh and our bones. And ultimately, the carbon, hydrogen circulating in our bodies is star stuff. We come from the galaxies. So, you know, we and the universe are inseparable. Somehow, that's why, in a sense, even the word environment is probably a little alienating. We have a personal body, we have a universal body, and they're both equally ours. And if we don't take care of the universal body, which recycles as our personal body, then we are doomed. And one of the things that has become very clear in the last few years in biological sciences is that 95% of all chronic illness, 95% of all chronic illness is directly or indirectly connected to inflammation in the body. You can measure this inflammation in the circulation. You can look at the microbiome, which is 2 million genes in our body, and you can see it's inflamed. You can see that inflammatory markers are very high in our systems. And then you can see that this inflammation, which is also climate change, global warming, the destruction of the ecosystem, the extinction of species, now risking our own extinction with mechanized death and modern capacities and ancient tribal polarizations. This is a time where we are at a crossroads. If we don't listen to what people like Karuna are saying, or people who are campaigning for a healthier environment, we don't listen to that, we could probably risk our extinction. The last extinction was 65 million years ago when a meteorite fell on planet Earth and dinosaurs were wiped out. Well, we came along as the next species, but now we are the species that has become the biggest predator on this planet. We are pillaging and raping Mother Earth. We are killing other species. We are killing ourselves. We are killing each other. And we may be risking the next extinction. It's not going to be because of a meteorite falling on Earth. It'll be human activity. So climate change, environment, global warming, sustainability, biological sustainability, war, terrorism, extinction of species, poison in our food chain as a result of the pollution, they're all interrelated. To create peace, you need social justice. You need economic justice. You need to understand the context in which war and terrorism arises and the fear that is propagated by demagogic leadership all across the world, and now including our own country. Who would have thought this would have happened in the United States, but it's happening. So to achieve peace and social and economic justice and get sustainable world, we have to look at the whole picture. And that is everything that we do, how we treat each other, the food we eat, the stress that we create for ourselves and for others. And the fact that, as Einstein said, no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness in which the problem was first created anyway. So we have to elevate this conversation, and we have to start with ourselves. So when you say, can we be unified or can we come together? First of all, we have to stop being angry peace activists. We have to be the change we want to see in the world. We have to bring sustainability in our homes, in our habits, and we have to get together. I think when a critical mass of people get together, and they are the examples of the change that you want to see in the world, as in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, then with all the social media we have, with all the educational institutions we have, with all the science we have, and with all the people who want to leave a better world for their children and their grandchildren, we have the means to bring about a more peaceful, just, sustainable, healthier, and joyful world.
Certainly, certainly. And, you know, one of the things that has occurred to me is that maybe climate change, climate disruption, and the mass extinction of species may be the highest priorities that humanity has. The problem is that we've been so distracted with other things, you know, having to do with our own interactions, you know, intolerance, poverty, war, militarism. So
they're all connected.
It's all connected. Exactly. So, Kabir, let's bring you into the conversation. Do you want to add anything to this? And please tell us about the amazing project that you are collaborating with Deepak on called Home Where Everyone Is Welcome, which is directly applicable to what we're talking about now, since it's celebrating American immigrants, and immigration is one of those flashpoint issues in our society. How is Home Where Everyone Is Welcome helping to create a culture of peace and nonviolence?
Right, well, all the things we're talking about you know, creating unity in the title of your conference, that's really the nugget of that is creating empathy. And how do we create more empathy? You can do that through, you know, facts and figures, but we think art is a great way of doing it and being spiritual activists. And so what we did is we took one of the more controversial issues of the day, immigration, and we decided to use meditation music and kind of introduce a very musical element to this idea of immigration. And so, you know, going back to what Deepak's saying about all the geographical, geological and environmental problems that we may be facing, increasingly there's going to be environmental refugees, there's going to be people moving from one border across the border to another country. More people live outside their country today than ever in human history. So we created this project called Home. I'll show it to you. H-O-M-E, Home, Where Everyone Is Welcome. Poems and songs inspired by American immigrants. And it comes with a CD, which goes into a CD player. You can also get a digital iTunes version of it. And every single poem, we took you know, immigrants that people know a lot about, like Albert Einstein or Celia Cruz. And we also took some immigrants that people may not know that much about. Like my father came from India at a very young age and swept floors in a Goodyear tire factory. And he moved up to really embody the American dream. And Deepak wrote a story about his father. And our colleague, Paul Abdurinos, wrote a poem about his father. So it's just a way of enlarging empathy because, you know, when you read poetry, it activates the same part of your brain as music. And we want to show people that, look, you can get angry at what's going on, or you can create something, hopefully a beauty. And the other thing that's beautiful, I've got to tell you, is this is the first time that Deepak is singing on an album.
Wow.
Yeah, and he has a very beautiful tenor timbre. And so the album begins with him singing home, right? And he says, oh, that's Deepak singing home. And he plays the drums and the percussion. So it's a very interdisciplinary project, and we hope you like it.
That sounds fabulous. And Deepak, do you want to add anything about Home? How did you come to do this project?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I knew that poetry was a way to get to the soul. You know, when you clothe facts with music and poetry, then you give facts a soul. People don't listen to facts. You can talk about them till you're blue in the face. But when you take the same facts and then you articulate them in a way that speaks to the heart and the soul, then people listen and they remember. You know, you remember all the emotional moments in your life, and you even remember facts that were connected to feelings in your heart or in your gut. So I think now that we are engaging in this conversation, immigration is, of course, a big issue. And the wall is a metaphor, you know, when there are no walls in on our planet, as Karina said earlier. And if there were walls, they should be on the internet to block
firewalls.
Yeah. Because those are right now the walls that people invade and breach. So this is a very important project for us. But I'm thinking that, you know, Karina, as we move forward on issues that are so dear to your heart, environment and climate change, perhaps a music project is on the way there too.
Well, that's very that's an exciting thought. I definitely look forward to listening to this and seeing this wonderful creation. It sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
No, I unless you have a question.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about the power of collective awareness and action. My organization, We the World, and our We campaign are working to achieve unprecedented cooperation and coordination between transformative grassroots groups and movements to address society's major challenges that are being discussed during this telesummit. The idea is that collective awareness and action can help foster a cultural shift towards we consciousness that values the common good, so that the needs and well-being of all people and the entire web of life are valued and prioritized, going from individual attitudes to government policies and priorities. So, Karina, what is the role of movements? You mentioned before that that's part of one of the core activities of the Center for Earth Ethics. So for you, what is the role of movements in creating peace and sustainability? Do you think it's possible to build a transformative ongoing movement of movements through platforms like the We Campaign and others to address climate disruption and the mass extinction of species while creating a cultural shift towards this kind of we consciousness and the common good?
Well, thank you. I am very moved to reflect on the word we, and particularly at this time in our nation when we face such a challenge in the state of our political discourse. I think it's significant that the Constitution begins with we the people. In the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And I, at the time, to begin such a document was not so common, because there, what was happening in creating this country, in forging this democracy, was the hope really was in that small d democratic spirit of out of many one. And part of, I'm very interested and intrigued by this wonderful project Home, in part because I think it's really important that we realize in this time of sort of mass production, consumption, consumerism, where a lot of the social fabric has been kind of taken over by those forces, advertising, media. I mean, when we're talking about building platforms for a movement, we also have to look at what's already out there, which is sort of overwhelming and I think gives a lot of people some anxiety. One of the things that strikes me about the Home Project is to remind people that we create our own culture. that culture comes from families and communities and ancient traditions, that it's not something that we need to rely on Hollywood or corporate America or anybody to just sell us as a product. And so I think that one thing about the movement is to be true to the ground up grassroots identity of we the people, to recognize that all over this country is so much talent, so much ancient wisdom that is more powerful, I would say, than new technology. But through new technology, we have the chance to capture and enjoy it all together. I think movements are very important in all of these areas. I think you can see with the climate movement that there have been people from frontline communities who are experiencing the immediate effects of pollution. So those that live near coal-fired power plants, where they themselves suffer from the asthma, cancer rates, and other health effects that come directly from the extraction and burning of fossil fuels. The leadership that they provide in this movement is very important, because eventually, when it comes to the weather systems and the impact of all this, it affects all of us. It's a real metaphor for the kind of world and existence that we're in. Eventually, it will affect the whole if it affects one. And of course, we remember Martin Luther King, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. The inescapable network of mutuality. I think that's a great description for climate change. I agree that listing facts and figures, as compelling as they are, is not the same as feeling in your something touch your soul that you know is your deepest truth. And in movements where it is led by people who are not, they're not doing it out of a messaging campaign, out of a professional position, out of a top-down desire to write a platform, but rather just growing out of their own personal experience. All of those people coming together, as they did in the People's Climate March, creates a kind of groundswell. And I think now we do have the benefit. I want to thank Deepak for his kind words about my father. He has also an exciting thing to share in the movie The Inconvenient Sequel. I would encourage folks to go see that if they want to get a picture of where his work now is in the climate movement, and also a view of what it was like to come together in Paris to create that treaty in December 2015, that agreement, that is still so alive, because despite the fact that President Trump has declared the U.S. withdrawn from that treaty, it is so strong because of the movement that was built, because of long, hard work in many communities. So cities, corporations, all of these are parts of a bigger movement. So it can't be broken as easily when it is truly a popular movement.
Oh, definitely. And I'm glad that you are interested in focusing on the idea of we, too. If you go to we.net, you'll see the images at the top. They don't just show all kinds of people. They also show dolphins and lions and ecosystems. So it's like this expanded concept of we. And I think inspired by Deepak, that could go to the entire universe, since we are all the stuff of, we're made of the stuff of stars, as Deepak was saying.
So Rick, these days there's a lot of talk among systems thinkers, systems biologists, about something, the phenomenon of emergence. Emergence is the creation of something that never existed before. And to bring about the we emergence, what you need is an understanding of systems thinking. And that says that when you have a diversity of people in a movement, so it's environmentalists, scientists, humanitarians, artists, storytellers, poets, philosophers, musicians, maximum diversity in not only profession, but even multiculturalism, ethnicity, which is the idea behind the album Home. And because we dedicated this album to immigrants from all parts of the world who created America, what we know as modern America, is created by immigrants, and now we are fearing immigrants. But when you have maximum diversity, when you have a shared vision, when you have emotional and spiritual bonding, when you have an open and transparent system, which is now through these networks, social networks, and through media, your VNet is an example, then emergence will happen spontaneously, because we are all committed to something bigger than ourselves. And that was the idea behind the immigration movement that we want to start. But it's the idea behind the interconnectivity of not only all of us as a human species, but our connection to other species, and ultimately our connection to a living planet.
Exactly, like Gaia, the concept. So Kabir, any thoughts about the role of movement building on your end to raise public awareness and take collective action for peace, sustainability, and transformation? Do you explicitly connect your project home with the immigration movement? And also, do you think we'll ever have a culture of peace and nonviolence in this country and in the world?
Good question. I mean, to your last question, I think we can get, we can become more peaceful and live more harmoniously, for sure, and live in a place where we're respecting each other with for our differences and because of our differences. But there is something to be said for having differences, because those differences is what keeps us strong. And, you know, the first type of currency in this world is energy. And if you look at all throughout the natural kingdom, organisms are involved in symbiotic relationships. They rely on each other for different specializations. And so we need to make sure America remains culturally and cognitively very strong. If someone from another part of the world can come to America, and sure, they can become part of our melting pot, but they can also retain their ethnicities and their way of looking at something and enrich or come up with a solution. And, you know, I have a history in finance. And when you look at, for example, you know, the businesses in America, immigrants make up about 11% historically of our population, but they make up a huge proportion, about a quarter of the new startups are immigrants, right? People forget that 40% of the Fortune 500 are created by immigrants or first generation Americans. These are companies we all know. Apple Computers, Steve Jobs, his biological father is from Syria, right? Wow. Sergey Brin, Google, he came from what was then the Soviet Union. McDonald's, his family came from Poland. So 3.5 million people in America work at corporations that have been started by immigrants. And that's why in our book Home, we wrote a lot of poetry inspired by different business people, because we want people to realize these are the employers, these are the job creators in our society. In fact, the poem we wrote about Sergey Brin is composed exclusively in computer code, sort of drive home the point of code poetry, that people are writing poems all the time that just happen to be in computer code.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Thank you. So Deepak, you have shown the power of collective awareness and action by doing a series of global meditations that broke the Guinness Book of Records with hundreds of thousands of people meditating simultaneously. Can you see building on that kind of mindful meditation movement to create healing, connection, and greater unity in our society? And specifically, how can the transformation of human consciousness lead to a culture of peace and nonviolence?
Well, I think, you know, meditation is a way of quietening the mind. And when the mind is quiet, inner energies wake up and bring about transformation. You're right, we've now taught over 6 million people online meditation with Oprah's help and other collaborations. So meditation is a good way to bring people to their common source, because despite our conditioned mind, the source of mind is common. You know, so when we go beyond our cultural, economic, and tribal conditioning or ethnic conditioning, or historical conditioning or economic conditioning, you end up in a place of consciousness which is common to all. We're kind of little rivulets from a common source of consciousness, and that's why meditation is so powerful. The album Home is, in a way, a musical and poetic meditation as well. So that was part of the idea behind the project. How do you cool down the inflamed world right now? It's not only climate change. People are inflamed. Their brains are inflamed. Their bodies are inflamed. And their actions are inflammatory. As long as we behave in a way that's inflammatory, which is anger, hostility, the opposite of peace, we will wreak havoc not only on our own well-being, but on the well-being of others and of other people, but also on the well-being of society and ultimately the planet.
Exactly. So, Karenna, as we wind up, what is the primary message you want each person listening to this to take away from this discussion that can help them improve their lives and, of course, the world? And please tell people how they can connect with you to support your efforts.
Well, thank you. First, to connect with me and find out about the work that we're doing at Center for Earth Ethics, please go to our website, which is centerforearthethics.org. We're based in New York City at Union Theological Seminary, so you can also find us through the Union Theological Seminary website. And I think the main message I would say is that I feel that it's time for us to work harder at our democracy, at engaging on a civic level. And for those who are feeling the suffering of a society that doesn't value everyone equally, that is measuring its success only in terms of monetary wealth, no matter how inequitable, no matter what the destructive means to such precious things as air and water, that it's time to come together in our democracy to try to change it, because the system is very imperfect and it can be a real turnoff. I mean, I certainly have felt that way. And yet, we're in a situation now where we need to be calling Scott Pruitt at the EPA and writing letters to the Secretary of Interior, Ryan Zinke, saying don't give up the public lands for mining and drilling. These kinds of comments and actions can make a difference. Also voting and really understanding and making accountable the elected representatives on every single level. I think that's really important. It's time to do that because it can make a real difference. And some of these laws and policies are really very extreme right now, very destructive on a level that we haven't seen. So the amount of industrial waste that can go into your local streams and waterways could increase greatly. And I think we just need to be very cognizant and very vigilant about that right now. So at Center for Earth Ethics, we do things to engage people in the faith community. We have a very broad definition of what that means. But we do trainings for ministers who are interested in understanding the levels of public policy as well as the science. And we do other work like that, very respectful of grassroots community-led change. So thank you so much for this opportunity. I just wanted to add one other thing, which is that, you know, we've talked a little bit about extinction, and I was happy that it was raised in the way it was. And this is indeed supposedly the sixth great extinction. Unlike past events, 99% of the species threatened now, so almost all of them, are threatened by human activity. And that's not only the warming temperatures, but it's also the loss of habitat. And we know that's in the oceans as well. And so I think the other thing I would ask is that we start to really open our eyes, not only to people, to human beings, but also to all of these other living beings that we share the planet with, because not only do they have intrinsic beauty and value, but we're connected to them in ways that we do not even understand in terms of how the trees are cared for and the air and the water. So just to be cognizant of that as well, we do talk about people when we mean we, but I think that we also have a broader understanding of we as life on Earth.
Right, and when I say we, I always mean beyond not just people. Sometimes people say, oh, your organization is We the People, right? I say, no, it's We the World. It's not just people.
All so, sentient beings.
Yes, and the systems that support sentient beings, I would say as well. Kabir, what message do you want people to take away from this?
Just to, you don't get angry or hate, just get creative and express yourself and be part of this global conversation, which you're, you know, chairing, and your organization is doing a beautiful job at facilitating this conversation. You know, you can check out our website as well, home-everyone-welcome.com. Hear the music, read the poems, and send us your poetry. We'd love to read it and hear more about your family history and learn about your immigrant experience and how that can be part of our solutions.
That's fabulous, thank you. And Deepak, if you can do some kind of reflection or a meditation for peace for the International Day of Peace.
What I'd like everyone who's listening to this, and meditation is done with the eyes closed anyway, so you don't need to see me,
okay,
is to put your awareness in your heart and mentally ask the question, what kind of world do I want to live in? What kind of world do I want to leave for my children and their children? And if you ask the question in silence and you put your attention in your heart, you will inevitably see images and feelings will be evoked and thoughts will come to you. And then you should ask yourself, what can I do personally to participate in that transformation? So that would be my meditation for everyone who's listening to us today. Put your awareness in your heart and ask yourself, what kind of world, what kind of America, what kind of world do I want to live in? And what kind of world do I want to leave behind for my children and their children? And what can I do about it? And then listen to what your heart says. Be responsive to sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts that spontaneously arise.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Deepak.
And do check out our album, Home, on iTunes or anywhere else, and on online bookstores as well. Thank you, Karena, too, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Kabir.
Yes, thank you, and Kabir. Thank you, Deepak Chopra, Karena Gore, and Kabir Segal. I also want to thank the Shift Network team, and especially thank you all for listening. I hope you'll check out all the sessions of the 11 Days of Global Unity Telesummit. You can reach me, Rick Ulfick, and We the World by going to we.net. As Jonathan Granoff said when we first launched the We campaign, let's expand We so much that there is no longer any them. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Summer of Peace, brought to you by the Shift Network. To learn more about our global community of people awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about Summer of Peace, visit summerofpeace.net. You can also listen to past Summer of Peace recordings through the World Peace Library at worldpeacelibrary.com. Thank you again for joining us and for sharing this transformational peace-building wisdom with your friends and family.